At least I can see the front row, which is here or there, you know. Hey, don't applaud yourself, brother. You haven't got anything to be excited about. Of course, that's okay. You're in good company. We come here as part of the body of Christ to minister to our brothers and sisters. You know, sometimes you go places and you get into situations where you feel really uncomfortable. You know, you feel just about as in place as a pork chop at a kosher wedding, you know, or a milk bucket under a bull. You know, you feel totally out of place because you get into situations where you have absolutely nothing in common with people. And when I walk out on stage, a lot of times when the lights are on, I can see people that if it wasn't for the Lord, no way, Jose. Not this little gray duck. Oh, no. Hey, there are some of you people out there that if I wasn't saved, I wouldn't hang around with you. Because you guys, man, one look at you and I cannot handle you. If it wasn't for Christ, I could not handle some of you people. I couldn't. I mean, you just, everything about you is just contrary to everything that I was raised to hold sacred and raised to consider to be, really important. I mean, you wear suits, you have short hair. I mean, you know. Have you ever heard those words coming out of your mouth while you looked at somebody like me? But right now, we haven't got time to worry about the ways we're different. Did you guys know that this world's going to hell? Did you know that? This world is going to hell. The world we live in is going to hell. Did you know that? Did you know that you can walk out of this building, walk down on the street right here, right downtown, and from and within a block from here, you can find people who are going to hell? And going fast. I mean, working at going to hell. I mean, they are out there. I'm going to hell, boy. I'm digging the hole right now. I mean, I am going to hell. You know. Cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women. You know, I mean, boy. Zip, you know. Yes, you know. If they don't come out in China, they'll be in hell. Well, anyway. Anyway, isn't it weird that the mighty army of the children of God, armed with the truth, clothed in righteousness, shielded with faith, girded with truth, shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, spend the vast majority of their time either shining their armor or fighting one another? The Lord says that we're supposed to get His mind. I'm sure glad I got His mind. I'm glad I don't have to rely on mine. You know? I mean, really, you know? And luck? Did you ever hear anybody say, "Hey, good luck"? Oh, please. Don't ever wish me my own luck, please. Don't ever say, "Hey, hope you have good luck," or "hope your luck holds out, Mike." Don't ever hope that my luck holds out. Because I don't have any at all. I mean, I'm the kind of guy, you could go out and it could be raining soup. I'd get hit in the mouth with a bale of hay. I mean, I went to Vietnam, right? I joined the Navy, first of all. I joined the Navy because, quite frankly, I wanted to stay away from the Marine Corps. I mean, I wanted to serve my country, but I wasn't crazy. You know what I mean? I want to get in the water. I want to jump down out of a pine tree. I want to kill them and jump on them. You know, hey, you know, that's part of the Marine Corps anthem. I mean, woo, you know, and these guys are, they are hardcore. Not me, man. And I didn't want to be in the Army because who wants to be called a dog face? I mean, I got enough problems with this as it is, you know. Nah, you know. So I decided to join the Navy because I figured if I got killed, I'd be clean. I mean, if they blow a boat out from under you, at least you die in the water, you know, and that's cool with me. And when I got in the Navy, just to show you what kind of luck I got, when I got in the Navy, see, I went to a place in boot camp called classification. Now, classification in the Navy is where they let you pick out what they want you to be. See? And they had a list of things that you could be, you know, possible job selections. And I went down a list, and I saw the word cook. Now, look at me. I look like a cook. I mean, I am shaped like a cook. See this? This is a cook's tum-tum. This is known as being a full gospel preacher. I mean, I have generally always had one of those, except for two times. Once I had dysentery and once I was on heroin, neither of which I recommend as a dietary method because they're bummers. But anyway, I said to the guy, well, I want to be a cook, man. I want to be a cook, man. Because I'm thinking in the back, I get all the scraps, you know. And so you hang around enough garbage cans, you think that way. Anyway, so I say, I want to be a cook. And the guy goes, hey, man, why is it at classification they have these guys with the voices that could convince you of anything, you know? What you need is an Edsel. Yeah, man, I could really use an Edsel. Nobody could use an Edsel, but the guys in classification could sell you an Edsel, you know? And they go, he went, oh, man, you don't want to be a cook. I go, oh, you know, I was still pretty much of a hippie then. I went, what do I want to be, man? He said, you don't want to be a cook. What you want to be is a hospital corpsman. I went, oh, man. What do they do, you know? He says, they hand out drugs and hang around nurses. And I went, oh, man. Sign me up, man. You know, I mean, that is right down my alley, you know. Doping women for pay, far out, you know. So he said, okay, just sign right here. Put first choice by Corman. I put first choice. He said, okay, sign right here. So I got out the pen, and I'm signing my name, you know. And I had been doing a lot of dope, so I wrote a lot slower, you know. I felt a lot bigger with one. I felt a lot better with one of those pencils that's about the size of a horse's leg, you know. And just as I got to the K-E and Warnke, and I went, he went, zap, yanked the paper away from me and said, gotcha, sucker. Gotcha, sucker? Man, I don't even know what you're talking about, man. So I trooped on back to the quarters, you know, and I was sitting around with the rest of the guys, and they said, hey, hippie, hey, A.B. They used to call me A.B. in boot camp. I don't know why. They just called me A.B., you know, and they said, hey, A.B., what did you sign up for? I said, oh, man, I got a deal, man. I'm going to be a hospital corpsman. And this guy went, you dummy. Well, all that means, man, is I get to hang around with a lot of ladies and pass out drugs. And he said, you dummy. He said, don't you know what hospital corpsmen do? I said, no. He says, they fix people up, hurt people. And I went, oh, well, that's okay. He said, yeah, but you're in the military, man. Don't you understand? You're in the military. Who is the one group of people that get hurt the most in the military? I said, you don't mean, and they said, from the halls of Montezuma. And it was then that I found out that the United States Marine Corps does not have its own hospital corps. They use Navy hospital corpsmen. I spent 3.5 years in the Marine Corps. Don't wish me luck. Oh. Whew, 3.5 years in the Marine Corps, man. And they did things when they sent us to Vietnam to scare us, you know. Like we have pockets, on utilities, you have pockets all over you, you know. On green utilities, Marine Corps, you have pockets. All these pockets, every place, you know. I mean, you know, if you put something in all of those pockets, you would sound like a junk truck, you know what I mean? You'd walk up and salute and go, you know, awful, man. And they had all these pockets, and I said, hey, man, what are these pockets for? And they said, they're for guys that wear glasses. I said, what? I mean, I wear glasses on my face, man. My pockets can't see. He says, you don't understand. He says, we issue you 4 extra pairs of glasses. You put one in this arm pocket. You put one in this arm pocket. You put one in this leg pocket and then one in this leg pocket. That way, if you got blown up, at least maybe you'll have one part left where you got an extra pair of specs. I said, what would I want them for then? So I could watch myself bleed? Oh, and then we went to Vietnam and, you know, I thought, well, by the time I went to Vietnam, I was an E5, and, you know, that's a sergeant. So I figured I would get into some rear echelon type thing. First Battalion, 4th Marines, Alpha Company, operating 3 miles south of the DMZ, in the jungle, in the yucky jungle, in the hot, with a gun with people, and I'm shooting, and I don't know anybody out there, and no, I'm not mad at anybody, I don't know what's going on. There's some dude in Hanoi and some dude in Washington go get them, boys, you know? You know, some guy going, my fellow Americans, and you are. I'm over here. I'm in the jungle. I ain't your fellow American, you know? And some guy in Hanoi go, my fellow Vietnamese, you know? So we're out there in the jungle, man, in a pseudo-nuclear war. First of all, I am the klutziest soldier in the world. I mean, that's it. Sergeant Klutzo, you know? I mean, I fell. You know, most people, they say, I've marched on 12 combat operations. I fell on 12 combat operations. No kidding. I couldn't walk 4 feet without falling over something, you know? They had wait-a-minute vines in Vietnam. They hung out of trees. They had thorns on them about 3 inches long, and you'd walk by and they'd grab your clothes and go, wait a minute. You know? Weird place. Weird. Weird, strange place. We had a guy that got ate by a tiger. That is not something that I am conditioned through going through public high school in the United States to handle. Hey, Charlie got ate by a tiger. Oh, man. What am I doing here? Where are the broads and dope? I need them now, you know? It's spooky, you know? And, you know, here we are out there, man, in the jungle, and they got bugs, man. Big bugs. I don't know what it is you don't dig, but I do not dig bugs, man. Bugs turn me off. Bugs are not where it's at. Bugs are a bummer. Bugs, you know, they got centipedes that long, man, a foot long. I don't want to say they're big, but you can hear them walk, you know. And there have been Americans in that country so long that the centipedes, when they walk, the feet are going, you know, it's a strange place, this place, you know. Ooh, you know. Monsoons, the rain, you know. You have to tie yourself to a tree to keep from getting blown off the ground. It's not too bad for you little guys down here. I mean, compared to me, little guys, I don't mean, you know, small persons. I mean, little people can get blown. I weigh 200 pounds, you know, and I had to tie 1 foot to the ground. I look like a barrage balloon, man. When's the wind gonna quit, Charlie? You know. I keep saying to people, are you sure John Wayne started out like this? You know? Oh, it's terrible, man. And it was just, one time I was going down a hill and we were rappelling, because we were pretty repellent people, you know. I mean, you spend 60 days in the same clothes, boy, and you can repel anything, you know. You don't have to worry about getting bit by mosquitoes. The mosquitoes go, you eat that, you're crazy, man. I'll tell you what, man, I got a choice between a marine and a water buffalo. I am taking the buffalo, you know. Oh, and one time we're going down this cliff, you know, and we had this vine, and everybody was, you know, doing the whole, you know, gung-ho bit. We grabbed a vine and walked down, and then we'd kick out and slide down the vine. They all had these jungle gloves. Then you'd stop and bang up against the shelf, and you go, pretty fun, huh? You kick out and bang, you know. Everybody did it, and they said, okay, Doc, it's your turn. I went, hey, that's what they called me when I was a Marine, Doc, because I was a corpsman. Medicine, Doc. It's not important. Actually, none of this is important, you know. Everybody's heard all the rest of my testimony. This is a different part, see. See, I got saved in Navy boot camp, so I was a Christian going through all of this, luckily, you know. I used to carry a Schofield Bible with me everywhere, man, you know, because, boy, I tell you, that's one place you can't afford to be away from God. I met an atheist once. At least he was an atheist until we got to Nam. But the fourth week there, he had a chain on his neck. He had a cross, a Buddha, a Star of David, a star and crescent, an Indian arrowhead, some, you know, hair from a sheep or something. And he had I said, what's the matter? He says, I believe. I said, what do you believe in, man? I can't tell from that chain. He says, I don't know, but in my position, I can't afford to make anybody mad. You know? Anyway, we're down on the rope, man. We're rappelling down, and they said, come on, Doc. So I grabbed the rope, you know, and I jumped up. Bing. Of course, when I hit the rock, it went. And everybody's on top going, hey, take it easy, you know. So I kicked off again, and the vine broke. And I went, snap, oh, good. Look out, Bill! And when I landed on a slope, so I didn't get hurt real bad, but I landed in a grove of baby banana trees. And it had just rained, and baby banana trees, after it rains, are like the inside peeling of a nanny. And when you hit them, boy, they are slicker than snot on a doorknob. I hit all 200 pounds of me, pack, gun, and everything. Hit those banana trees. I slid for 150 yards. Wow! I think there was a Vietnamese in the grass getting ready to shoot me, but when I went by, he just went, yeah! And he turned around his partner and he said, oh, you see that? I said, yeah, what was it? I said, it was either a fat marine or a harpooned hippopotamus. When I got to the end of my run, at the end of the 150 yards, it was a 10-foot drop into a river. I said, yeah! Oh. Here we are in a nuclear, pseudo-semi, partially nuclear war. We're in a pseudo-semi, private, partially semi-thing war, right? Now, the thing is, it gets to be a pseudo-semi, private, precious, sort of semi-nuclear war when they use everything they got except the big boom. And over in Vietnam, they used everything. They had mechanical marvels. Men put their brains to work, and they come up with so many fantastic things, like things that you step on and bounce up in the air and blow your head off. Men have these great, fantastic minds, you know. And they had all of these bombs and stuff. And one time we got into a firefight. Well, we got into a firefight several times. As a matter of fact, I got wounded. I'll tell you how lucky I am. I got wounded 5 times. Yeah, you thought I was a vagrant. I'm really a veteran, man. I got medals on to there, you know, and doesn't mean anything. 10 cents in those medals will get me a cup of coffee at Sambo's, you know. But anyway, here we are. We got into this firefight. Now, they call it a firefight because that's when everybody's shooting at each other, and they haven't figured out a way that you can calmly say that in newsprint other than firefight. There are a lot of words that we used, and they were not firefight, but we're down there, and everybody's shooting at each other, you know, and they called in artillery support. So over the, you hear this, these shells coming in, you know, they sound like a train. You know. Then somebody called airplanes, and they had these phantom jets. And they dropped this napalm, you know. So the whole general thing is, I got hit with an arrow. No kidding. No kidding, man. I got the scar. It went in right there, and it came out right there. I got pinned to the ground with an arrow, man. I haven't even got enough class to get hurt modern. I'm crawling up the side of this hill on my belly, you know. Everybody else is shooting. I'm down in the grass going, hey, me, babe, you know. And I'm crawling wrong. All of a sudden, bonk, you know. And I look over, and my arm is pinned to the ground with an arrow. And I look over this cat next to me, this other Marine Corps sergeant, and he goes, only you, man, only you. I had this terrible desire to yell, circle the wagon! We didn't have any wagons, and your general Marine doesn't know what a circle is, so, you know. Oh. I went to a village one time, and I was handing out candy bars to little kids. I'm standing in the back of my Jeep handing out candy bars to these little kids, and they're coming up, and they're doing their little bow, you know, and they're thanking me and everything. And when I get done, I'm putting the box back in the thing, and this 12-year-old kid goes into his house, and he comes back out with a gun, and he shot me. I get shot by little kids, you know? I mean, he didn't hurt me real bad. It went right under my arm. It got just enough of me to make a little cut, but it hit my black jacket with enough power, and that's what I had on, like a bulletproof vest sort of thing called a flak jacket. I can't go into the whole details, but it deflected the bullet. Me and Norm Crosby are closely related. Anyway, a bullet hit the flak jacket, deflected under my arm, and it cut me just barely. It was just really minor, but it hit me with enough power to knock me out of the Jeep. And I'm falling out of the Jeep, and I'm telling you, the only thing I could think of, the only thing that was going through my mind was, if you don't like Hershey's with almonds, say so. Weird city, man. Weird city. People say, good luck, and I go, oh, man. Oh, bless God. We caught a snake one time. In Vietnam, we caught a snake. Well, actually, it caught us. It was a boa constrictor. And it was 1 million yards long or something, you know. And it was hanging in a tree. You know? And it went to sleep. And when they go to sleep, they start to uncoil. And they hang and hang and hang. And pretty soon, they just fall out of the tree. Boom, you know. And they wake up and go, oh, dinner time. And they go to find a moose to swallow whole, you know. Big things, you know. We're walking along under these trees. And my best friend in Vietnam was a guy by the name of Teddy Bear. He was a machine gunner and he was black. Now, I've noticed something about black people. They don't like snakes. At least every black person I've ever known has not liked snakes. And Teddy Bear, I had a snake skin wallet he wouldn't come near. You know? Well, we're walking along and guess what? The snake going, yeah, bloom. And I turned around and all I could see was Teddy Bear going. And this snake all over him, trying to get away in 42 directions. You know? We couldn't kill it because we didn't know where Teddy Bear started and the snake stopped, you know. Oh, so we got caught by a snake, and Vietnam was weird. Vietnam was a sad thing. I remember these times because I have bad dreams about the other times, so I don't have to remember them. But tell you what, I learned a lesson in Vietnam from something that happened. We went one time to a place called Qua Viet. And Qua Viet is a beautiful place. It's all this white, 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 white sand. And it's an in-country R&R place. R&R is what we call rest and relaxation. And after you've been out in the jungle for a while, and all of these snakes have been dropping on you, and your friends have been getting eaten by tigers, and had rock apes over there. I remember one time we were swimming in this water hole, and I looked up, and there was these monkeys in a tree. And I went, hey, look at the monkey. And the monkey went, ooh, ooh, ooh. Hey, look at the marine. You know, we were down at Qua Viet, and we went down there, and it was just a time of resting. You just laid around, you swam in the South China Sea, and I played volleyball, and they would bring in steaks. Man, we had steaks for every meal. Steak, and it was good because we didn't eat hot meals in the bush, because you light a fire and that tells everybody where you are, and that can cause a party that you're not really interested in being invited to, you know. And, you know. And so we were down there and we had hot food, you know, and they had vegetables, and then we'd have the steaks every meal, you know, and all this good red meat building us up, you know. We're doing all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, one day they said, get your gear, pack up, suit up, clean your guns, and let's go. And we cleaned our weapons all up and everything. We suited up. We got our gear on, helmets, the whole banana. We ran out and got in these trucks, and we thought we were going back to our headquarters base. Well, they took us 10 miles down the road, and we were like about 72 miles from our headquarters base. And they let us out of the trucks, four complete companies of Marines, and they said, walk. And we did a sweep from the sea, four companies long, and just one big long line. We did a sweep from the beach all the way to the mountains, over 70 miles in 4 days, over this terrain. We walked and walked and marched and walked and marched and ran and marched and walked. Sometimes tanks would come and they would pick us up and they would take us down the road a piece and they'd let us off. And the next day, it was the same. And those were the times when we knew that we weren't there just for Teddy Bear's snake and my sliding down the hill, but we were really engaged in a war, and that there were really people out there who were bent on killing us. They were different from us in ideology. They didn't believe the way that we did. They were the enemy, and they were there, and they had one purpose in mind, killing us before we killed them. And on this particular trek, it was dirty, and it was nasty, and it was hot. It was awful. And we were walking along every day. Guys would get sick. I lost half my company to heat exhaustion. When they would take a rest, I couldn't rest. I had to run up and down the line checking on people's blisters and seeing if they were okay and stuff. Because you may think a blister is a small thing, but not there it wasn't. And finally, one day, the mortarmen dropped out. I carried an 80-pound pack in Vietnam. I didn't have this then, really. I carried an 80-pound pack because on account of I was a corpsman, and not only did I need my regular gear, the same gear that all the other guys had, but I had to carry all kinds of medicine and tools and things in my pack in case somebody got hurt. And this guy, who was a mortarman, this one day, he fell out. He had sun exhaustion, and I called a helicopter, and they medevaced him away. And here was a three-man mortar team with one man missing. Now, a three-man mortar team, every man carries some rounds, some mortar rounds, shells. One man carries a tube, one man carries a tripod, and one man carries a base plate. The base plate is the most important part of the whole mortar, because without a good foundation, if you fired the mortar, it would just go down into the ground. So you got to have this big metal plate to put the mortar on. It's called a base plate. Well, when he fell out, there was nobody to carry the base plate. So I said, hey, give it to me. And I took it. And I put the base plate up on top of the pack. And we were walking along through volcanic ash. Plus, it had been napalmed, and trees and stuff had been burned. And there was ashes. And every time you'd step, this black smoke would come up. And it would, you know, everybody had this grit in their pores and this black stuff up their nose and eyes all red. It was a terrible day. It was like being in hell. And I had taken my T-shirt off and I was wearing just my flak jacket and I had to pack over that. And the dirt and dust would get up on my skin on the sweat and it would work its way up under the pack straps. And as I'd walk, it would grind that grit into my arms. And one time I went like this and pulled myself up and it was real sticky. And I looked down in there and it had been rubbed raw and I was bleeding. And the sun was beating down, and it was so hot you couldn't think. And it was like your ears would ring. It was so hot that you'd just hear this in the air. And I'm walking along, and each time we stop, I get a little further back in the column. And by the end of the day, I was clear back in the back. I was so exhausted. I was eating everybody's dust. And my legs hurt so bad that in order to keep up, I had to actually say to myself, one, two, left, right, one, two, left, right, one, two, left, right. And it was coming to the end of the day. And the skipper walked back from the head. He was our captain. Nice guy, the captain. He was the kind of guy that didn't have to give orders. He was just a man. And he was the kind of man you had confidence in. And if he said, hey, fellas, we're going to walk around the world, we'd have said, right, skipper, we're right behind you. The skipper was a great guy. Anyway, he walked back to the back of the column and walked with me for a few minutes, and he said, hey, we're going to be setting in pretty soon, which meant that we're going to make camp for the night. He said, you see that knoll right over there? And I said, yeah, and there was a valley, and then there was a knoll. And you couldn't see down in the valley. You could just see, you know, like across the top. And he said, we're going to set up on that knoll because it's the highest ground out here. And it was ugly, this knoll. It was didn't have any grass on it, didn't have any trees. It was bare and it was barren. And we were going to set up on the crown, very wise. And we want to be on the highest ground so you can see what's happening. But we had to go down in this valley first. And when we went down in the valley, it was like God had taken his finger in that terrible, awful place. And with miracle love and kindness and patience, and sweetness and joy had taken his finger and run it along the ground and made that gully. Because down in that gully, there was a river, a stream. And all up along the sides of the stream, there was high, beautiful, lush grass. And there were birds. The only place around there for birds to roost was there. So the place was alive with birds. And in Vietnam, the birds are exotic and beautiful, and they make those Tarzan sounds, you know. Wah, wah, ee, 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 ee. Which after a while gets to be pretty, but the first night you're there, you're going, you know. They've come to get me, you know. So we walked down into this valley, and I'm telling you, it was beautiful. And the sun was just going down, and the birds were coming into roost, and there was these trees, and it was beautiful. And I was way at the end of the column, and everybody marched through the stream that was running across the trail that we were on. They marched through, and they were all way ahead of me, and I could see them going up the side of this ugly, dry, bleh, hill. And I come walking around the corner, and I'm going, one, two, and that hill on the other side looked like it was a million miles tall. No jive, man. It looked like it was a million miles tall. And I came walking around the corner, and when I did, I walked down into that stream, and it was so beautiful. And the water came up to about here. And that water got down in my boots and my old, poor old, hot, blistered feet. I have never in my life felt anything so good. I mean, it's like when I stepped in the water, it was like a cartoon, you know. It went, shh, and I went, you know. And I'm standing there, and I'm looking at this ugly old hill, all dry, and the same old volcanic dirt. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to sit out, and I'm going to eat a can of cold peaches for supper. And every time I take a bite, you know, the wind's going to blow, and it's going to be about half mud by the time I get to the end of the thing. And I won't be able to drink water unless I strain it through a wash rag first or something. And I looked out around here, and there was all these birds. And here was this water and all this beautiful stuff. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to stay here in this comfortable, cool place and just forget about this awful war and forget about the company and forget about the skipper and forget about everybody else's problems, and I'm just going to sit here and take care of myself. And actually, I actually sat down on the side of the bank. I didn't take my pack off. I couldn't get it off. I'm laying there on the side of the bank, and sun started going down, and there was this tree, and as the sun started going behind the tree, this shadow got longer and longer and longer, and pretty soon it hit me, and I started to feel cold, and all of a sudden the truth of the situation I was in dawned on me. If you wanted to ambush somebody and kill them, where would you hide? In high grass or in trees? And although this place looked like a beautiful sanctuary, in reality, it was false security. Because it was the only place in that whole area where my enemy could have hidden. And I realized that if I let the sun set on me and it got dark, that the enemy hiding in that ravine would slink out in the darkness and kill me. So I stood up and I took that pack and I walked out of that water. And I was way behind the others. They were already setting up on the top of the knoll. And I started walking up the trail to the side of the knoll. And I was walking along, and I was going, one, two, one, two. It hadn't gotten any easier. Except now the water from my false oasis was sloshing around in my boots and causing my blisters to absolutely boil. And I'm going, one, two, one, two, one, two. And I wanted to cry. Marine sergeant, I wanted to cry, and I'm going, oh, can't stand it. And all of a sudden, I heard a voice, and it said, hey, Doc. And I looked up, and there was one of my guys. And he said, Doc, you are a marching fool. He said, boy, he said, if I had to work like you work today, I'd have fallen out a long time ago. You're something else, Doc. And I went, one, two, one, two, one, two. And as I walked along, I heard somebody say, "Hey, here comes the doc." This other guy said, "Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be up here today if it wasn't for doc. I got sick this morning and I thought I was going to lose everything. And doc came along and he had them faithful old salt pills. Had an extra canteen on too. Hadn't been for doc, I wouldn't be here." Somebody said, "Yeah, doc's a good old boy, ain't he?" And I come walking up there and one of the guys came out and said, "Hey, doc, let me take that mortar plate from you." And he took that mortar plate off and man, my pack got light. One, two, one, two. I don't love you, you know. I'm walking up the side of that thing with my pack, and pretty soon some guy came down and said, "Hey, doc, let me take your pack." And he pulled that pack off my back. You know how it is when you drop your pack when you're hiking, man. It feels like you just fly into the air. Man, I was cruising up that hill then, man. Yes, sir. And I got up there, and all of the guys were up there on the top of the hill, and they came up, and they looked at me, and they said, "Doc, you're something else." And they're all sitting there, man, we just knew you'd make it, and boy, and they were patting me on the back and everything like that, and there was a crowd, and we were laughing and talking. I said, "Man, I just about pooped out back down the road," and we were cracking up and everything. And all of a sudden, the crowd that was around me of guys, my friends, kind of parted, and the skipper came walking toward me. The skipper walked through the crowd, and he said, "Hi, Doc." He said, "I knew you'd make it." He says, "I got faith in you, Doc." He said, "I knew you'd make it." He said, "I knew you wouldn't let me down." He made me feel so important. He said, "I knew you wouldn't let me down, Doc." And he said, "I was so sure that you were going to make it that I went ahead and I fixed a fire over here." It wasn't a fire, it was these heat tabs that burned. They burned without color or any kind of light. They just kind of sat there and quivered. And he says, "We're going to have a treat tonight." He says, "I'm going to break out some of the soup my wife sent me that I've been stashing away for a special occasion." And you know, when soup is a special occasion, you're in hard times. And he broke open the soup and he said, "Come on over here, Doc." He says, "I cleared a place over here for your tent by my place. And I set a fire over here for us, and I want to heat some water, and we're going to cook up this soup my wife gave me, and we're going to have soup together." He says, "I knew you could make it, Doc, and I'm proud of you." I always remember my captain coming to me and telling me that I'd done a good job and that he was proud of me. And he knew I'd make it. He was so sure that he prepared a place for me. And you know, someday I'm going to walk up another hill. That hill that goes up to Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem. I'm going to walk up the hills of glory and I'm going to go meet the Lord. On my way, though, in this life, there are going to be a lot of oases. I've already been in some. When I was young and I hurt from lack of love and lack of understanding, I came to an oasis called drugs. And I stayed in that oasis for a while, but you know, the enemy was there. And I'll tell you, the sun almost went down on me in that place and the enemy almost killed me. But thanks to the fact that somebody showed me where the captain was and I was able to see him, I forced myself to go on. And since I've been a Christian, there have been a lot of times where I've said, "God, you call me to this ministry. I travel 185,000 air miles a year. God, I can't do this. God, I'm tired." It's tempting to say, "I'm going to crawl down and I'm going to go into this oasis of self-centeredness and self and care only about me." And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit there. I'm not going to worry about my captain. I'm not going to worry about the army, the rest of the troops. I'm not going to worry about any of that. I'm just going to lay back in self-indulgence and give up the fight. But if the sun goes down on you there, you're dead. And someday, after I've gone through that final gully, and have overcome Satan's final trick, and I cross over that last river, and I start walking up the mountain of God, I want to hear a voice say, "Hey, Doc, you're a good old boy, Doc." And I'm going to turn around, and there's going to be one of the kids that I led to the Lord the first time I was in Wichita some years ago. We had a crusade here, and after the crusade, we went outside out here, and we cut off the water in the fountain. We baptized over 60 people in the fountain right out here. The first time I was in Wichita. I'm going to look, and there's going to be one of those guys waiting for me. And I'm going to go on a little further, and pretty soon somebody's going to come down off the hill, and they're going to say, "Hey, Doc, let me help you with your burdens, Doc. It's time to put your burden down. Let me help you, Doc." And I'm going to look, and it's going to be my brother that was killed in Vietnam just before I went. And I'm going to walk on, and I'm going to get to the top of the hill, and that great cloud of witnesses that encompasses us, my friends are going to come to me, and I'm going to know them, and I'm going to see the Christian brothers that led me to Jesus. And I'm going to see the people that I've known that I've helped lead to the Lord or have helped me in my Christian walk, and we're going to be talking. And all of a sudden, that crowd's going to part, and the great captain